at home. Fear and chaos are less rare, so we're all stuck at home. Coughing plenty everywhere. School is canceled, time to spare. Time to slowly, slowly glide. When you're stuck at home.
That's Sister Paige Burton and Sister Lexi McConaughey. They're serving in a mission in Georgia. And I found that song this last week. Very appropriate because it is, in fact, a General Conference this weekend. In fact, this may very well be the last episode before General Conference. Make sure you're following the Cultural Hall at the Cultural Hall, specifically on Twitter. We do live tweeting of all of the sessions, and we want to make sure that you hear us and that you join us and that you take part of General Conference with a little bit of a twist. Some fun stuff, some great observations. Also, if you're finding yourself on the front lines, maybe you're in the medical field or you're working at a grocery store this weekend, you can keep up on all the major announcements if you just follow our Twitter feed. Also, we do some stuff on Facebook. We do lots of great quotes on our Instagram, and it's all at the Cultural Hall. All right. Okay. I think that's about enough. Hope you guys have a great General Conference and you enjoy this episode of the Cultural Hall. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall, and joining me via the telephone is Brett Raymond. Now, you hear that and you think, Brett Raymond, is he a professional composer, an arranger, a studio musician, and a singer? Have I heard his songs before? I'm not going to say 100% guarantee, but I am going to say, I'm going to say a good solid 95% guarantee that if you have been a member of the church for any sort of length of time, that you have heard a Brett Raymond song. Welcome in, Brett.
Hey, thanks. Appreciate it, Richie.
So let's give people an idea, like the most popular Brett Raymond song, the one that they would listen to and go, oh, okay. Yeah, Brett Raymond, sure. What do you think that would be?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably something from Primarily for Grownups, which was in 1994, 26 years ago. Jeez. the primary songs. I'll tell you what rears its, should I say ugly head? Anyway, what rears its funny head, there you go. Every few years is the fact that Sting sang Book of Mormon Stories, and mm-hmm. it's really me, and it was from 1994, and it's just hilarious. This last thing a few weeks, actually as recent as a few weeks ago, and there was even some discussion on the YouTube video. I was like, hey, This wasn't Sting. This was Gordon Sumner who was Sting, right? and I found out he recorded this in 2003. It's like, dudes, you know,
guys, so, it's me, Brett Raymond, the not Sting, yeah, but you know.
Yeah, yeah, I've, yeah, it, it, Anyway, that's kind of a funny thing. And I did some early stuff for Michael McLean. Hold On, the Light Will Come is a popular one.
Hold on, yeah, the light will come. Right?
Boy, we even get live singing from this show.
Hold on. I just remember being able to listen to that the music on my mission and being able to really enjoy something that wasn't Mormon Tabernacle Choir and you know, to be honest, was inspirational. Hold On, the Light Will Come is a pretty great message.
Oh, it's a great song. In fact, it's my favorite McLean song. He's written a lot of them.
So, if he wrote it, did you sing it, or how? What's the collaboration there?
I was hired, and this is even further back, like in the 80s. I was hired to sing it. We had just, you know, sort of recently met each other, and he liked my stuff, and so he hired me for a couple of arrangements and to sing. So so I did that on that, what's the name of that album? Anyway.
Hold On, the Light Will Come album.
No. Let's see. A New Kind of Love Song. That was the name of the original album.
Okay.
So I did that and arranged it and then sang it. And same with Jeff Goodrich. There's a song called Oh Lord, My Redeemer that I did the same thing, arranged and sang. But my name is not on the cover.
So that Jeff Goodrich. That gives people some context as to who you are. But I want to go back in history a little bit.
Let's do it.
Tell me, are you a lifelong member of the church?
Oh, yeah. True blue, dyed in the wool.
Parents, grandparents?
Where did
the family come to the church?
Goodness, you know, Becky, my wife, is the genealogist.
Okay.
So you're going to have to ask her. But I don't know how far back it goes.
But as long as you can remember.
Well, yeah. I mean, my grandpa, who was a stalwart New Zealand missionary, my mom got her name from a little like 5-year-old girl that he felt, that sounds so creepy to say, fell in love with nowadays, you know, with our current sensibilities. But you know what I mean.
But sure, but back in those days, it was a very sweet and sincere, like, love of the people.
It wasn't 2020, it was 1920. It was probably, I don't know when he did. It was probably around there, actually. But anyway, so yeah. So at least my grandpa, who grew up in Woodruff, if anyone's ever heard of that, Woodruff, Utah.
Uh-huh. It's small town, northern, right?
Small town, northern, yeah, just this side of Bear Lake. Anyway, so grandpa for sure. I'm not sure how far it goes on my mom's side. I know my grandma was. I never did know my grandpa on that side. But at any rate, at least it goes that far back. And yeah.
But then just raised in the church, raised in Utah, I presume.
Raised in Utah, raised in big bad Ogden. So, yeah.
where does the musical skill and or ability come from? Is that a family trait, or did you kind of lean out on your own and do that?
Probably the answer is probably the same with most people, a little of both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom was a singer. And she had a little group. I think in those days they had what they called singing mothers, these little, you know, groups, clusters. And I think it was a church thing. I don't think it was a community thing. And she had a double trio that she would sing with, and they would come and practice in our living room. And I would, sit behind the chair and listen to them and love it. I just absolutely loved music from, I don't know, the womb, maybe day one. I can't remember ever not loving it. And then, you know, rock bands in the 70s and going to be the next, you know, great composer or Billy Joel or whatever. So that was my dreams when I was a little bit older, but yeah, piano lessons from 8.
Was it pretty much usual stuff? Was it a thing just watching mom perform that music or rehearse that music? That you're like, man, one day, or like, this is a calling and I need to fulfill this? Or was it just sort of an infatuation with it?
Yeah, more of the infatuation, at least at that age. You know, that was when I was a kid. I mean, you know, like 7 years old, you know, 10 years old. It wasn't until I got a little bit older and in high school that I thought this, I want to do this. I want, you know, and heard the Beatles and everyone else and said, yeah, this is, which is just, it's a common story for us baby boomers that are musicians, you know, it's a mm-hmm. common story. Heard the Beatles and that was it, you know?
So you,
that's what I want to do when I grow up.
So did you lean out then and start your own band, and what terrible name were they?
Yeah, I had a couple of bands, and you know, of course the little jam sessions and stuff, but bona fide bands. The name of our band in the '70s, me and my Ogden High School buddies,
mm-hmm.
it was called Expressway. We used to call ourselves Oblivion Express,
uh-huh.
which was Brian Auger's group.
Okay.
But no one knew that because no one knew Brian Auger, and I'm sure you haven't heard that name either.
I have not.
Great organ player.
Okay.
At any rate, yeah, and even in those days, he was pretty obscure.
So you just pick a completely obscure, already used name and take it for yourself.
Stupid?
Sure. No, that's fine. That's great.
And then I guess we repented, to use a church term,
uh-huh.
Or at least changed our minds, said this is stupid. So it became Expressway.
Okay.
Had another band after that called the J.J. Mason Band.
Okay. There was a J.J. Mason, I hope.
There was nobody named J.J. Mason. I don't know why we named it that, but that was it, the J.J. Mason Band. And then on my mission in Tokyo, Japan, this is wildest of all, I had a sort of a rock band.
How did you have a band on your mission? Hang on, wait a minute. You can't just gloss over that. I'm going to need the story, beginning, middle, and end of mission. No, come on.
How long is this interview? 2.5 hours?
Yeah.
Because... At any rate...
Give me the Reader's Digest version of that. How do you come to form a rock band on the mission?
The Reader's Digest version is in itself 22 minutes long. No, I'm just joking. I have no idea. But, it actually is a very... You know, I really should maybe write it down and stuff, but it's a very inspiring thing. It's pretty cool.
Well, then come on, Brett.
Well, it begins with guys that were sent to Mayabashi. That was a town... North and west, of Tokyo. And in the church-owned area there was a warehouse. And the warehouse had a drum set in it, a bass guitar, an amp. And we just happened to be there. We had a very young mission president who was 28 years old. I mean, that's like almost missionary age. Mm-hmm. And so, needless to say, it's pretty progressive. I mean, strict, but progressive. And anyway, we got together. We made we wrote a program. I met a lifelong friend there who was also a songwriter. And I would, you know, sort of fancied myself a songwriter and whatnot. I had written some songs before my mission, et cetera, et cetera. Had the big dream of being Billy Joel, blah, blah, blah. And so both of us got together and we wrote this program for families. And our mission president let us do that. We ended up recording it in Tokyo. Each one of these little steps is kind of a long story.
Yeah.
But anyway, we ended up recording it and then selling this cassette tape, folks. Uh-huh. This is
even pre-1980. Kids ask your parents what a cassette tape is. Sure.
Cassette tape. Anyway, and so we would go do these programs and you know, the members would sell this tape. And it's actually pretty good. Thought it was really good.
Was it able to be a missionary tool? Were the music
was.
That you guys had recorded, it was of a spiritual nature?
Well, it was both.
Okay.
It was, you know, about families. So there were fun up-tempo songs and there were some, you know, songs to make you think as well. And about eternal things, which would open the door to, you know, what we believe about families mm-hmm. and the eternal nature of them, etc. And then, interestingly enough, we were invited to a couple of things. Actually, we were invited to do some recording at a recording studio in Tokyo after the program, right?
Mm-hmm.
For this company, and ended up getting an offer for a recording contract.
Wow!
All of these things were my first experiences in this whole industry as a missionary. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's how it works for everyone, isn't it? They go serve on church service, and then they get a recording contract. I mean, that's a story old as time.
That's true.
Yeah.
Everyone I know.
Yeah. Seriously.
Literally.
Yeah, literally yeah, everyone was, I know.
I know, does that. It was pretty wild, and it actually was batted back and forth to Salt Lake. It was finally, as you might guess, decided that, nah, you guys shouldn't take this contract, but not for the reasons that you might guess. It was because we had staggered coming homes, you know?
Oh, yeah. And people had been called on missions at different times, so...
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And they didn't really want to mess up our plans. If, you know, it's kind of like if you boys want to come after, which my friend actually did, and I ended up going back there and helping him with his recording contract and stuff as well. But that's a whole nother story. But at any rate, they decided not to. And so, you know, we didn't keep the contract, but man, what an experience.
And the name of this group again was?
In Japan, we were called Family.
Family.
Family. Yeah. And then when we came back here, actually, the story continues.
Please.
We came back here and we did get a recording contract here in America. We all got together again, formed a rock band, played, you know, dances and this and that and the other, just, you know, cover tunes, whatever was popular in the 80s, you know, Huey Lewis, The Cars, blah, blah, blah. But wrote our own stuff too. And in fact, it's very cool. I'll have to get you some of this stuff because it was pretty progressive at the time. We had songs like The Peasants Will Be Dancing, Samurai Stole My Girlfriend, Nylon People. I mean, we didn't write the standard fare, I love you, goodbye.
Sure.
It was pretty wild stuff, but we did get a contract and even a video on MTV. It was pretty cool.
Get just out, one. All under the name Family.
No. This, we changed to our name changed to Souvenir.
To Souvenir. So at this time, when you're on MTV, you come back to the States, and you have that recording contract. It's called Souvenir. I want to take a break for a quick second. And when we come back, hopefully we can play one of those songs so that people can hear just a little snippet of it and be able to pick up your journey. We'll do that coming back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Hey, it's me, Richie T. I want to take a second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah. You have probably seen it. Gig workers across the country, across the world, really, unable to do and make that money from those gigs. So am I one of them? Yeah, you bet. Have I had 27 gigs that have not yet been rescheduled? Yes, you bet. Is that money? Yeah, you bet. Is that money probably not going to be realized? Yeah, I'm not begging. I just want you to know that if you do happen to know someone that is looking for a DJ, whether they live in Utah or not, quite frankly, I'll travel. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. Whether it's a work party, a post-corona party, maybe it's a wedding, whatever it is, if you need a DJ for it, I hope that you will consider having me be that DJ. Hop online, bestdjinutah.com, or at bestdjinutah, wherever you social media. Yeah, in a couple of weeks now, just go to bestdjinutah.com. And now there are social medias for Best DJ in Utah. You can find them on all of the Facebooks and the Instagrams and no Twitter, because who tweets about Best DJ in Utah? Well, everyone should, but I don't have a Twitter. It's at bestdjinutah.
Listen to me.
All right, so we're here in the second block of the Cultural Hall, and what you just heard was a little bit of Framed by the band Souvenir. It was written by you, Brett, or you have co-wrote it, or give me the story about that song in particular.
The guys that did most of the writing in the band were me and my buddy Quinn Coleman, but I can't remember who wrote this one. I'll have to look on the credits. It could have been the whole band.
I think it would,
we did some of those songs too.
It might have been John or Paul, or 30 years in the future, we'll actually be able to run it through a computer program and be able to tell you who likely wrote that song. So that's fun.
Every obscure song will be able to do that. That's true.
So give me an idea. In the early 80s, Souvenir, Framed, the MTV music video. How old are you at this point?
Okay, so 58, 88 would have been 30. So, mid-20s.
So you're right back home from the Mish. You get this recording contract. And then on MTV, and you're with this band, Souvenir. So we all know that there's a downfall, because every band has a downfall. What happened?
I'm not sure there was ever an upfall, truth be known.
You had a music video on MTV.
We did.
That's an upfall.
We never toured. We never made any money. I mean, I think that band cost me more money than it made, possibly. So it just, and we ended up, you're right, it's kind of the same story. Different guys had different, visions or whatever. Some were not happy in it. I was not really happy in it. I mean, these were my buddies, but by the time we actually got another singer in it, he was on the label, and they wanted to combine us to make it stronger. So Quinn was the main singer. I was sort of the sub singer. And then we got this other guy, Cody Hale, who is a great friend through the years, even now. Hale Theater, if you've heard of those guys.
How does he fit into the Hale Theater?
Well, he's one of Nathan and Ruth's sons.
Okay.
And he runs the Orem one.
Okay.
From what I understand. Now. But at any rate, at that time, he was a rock star with the rest of us. and so all of a sudden, I was relegated third singer, which means just I didn't sing really.
Well,
much,
you get to do the ever pivotal things like, ooh.
Sure, with everyone else.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
but it's important.
So the ego.
It's important that you're down a third, though, right? That you're matching within the chord, but not at all melody.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Well, you're actually talking music theory.
Yeah. Well,
wow. No, I was just talking pecking order. And so, yeah.
But your ego wouldn't stand for that.
Three.
Your ego wouldn't stand for that.
Well, I suppose if I look at it honestly, that's the case. I wanted to do my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had lots of ideas. I knew in my heart. In fact, I've been thinking about this recently. Fast forward 30 years. If I go out on my own, it will be sort of lonely. It will be a lot lonelier.
Yeah.
And I'll be darned if that really hasn't. that prophecy hasn't come to pass, because it has. I mean, it's been there are definite upsides to doing it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
The whole music thing, not talking about just being an artist or whatever, but
sure.
But it can be, you lose the camaraderie a little bit. I mean,
So as we kind of open that up a little bit, you have that opportunity to be in a band that has an MTV music video that costs you more money than it's worth, that doesn't tour around, that you're the third on the pecking order, and you say, forget it, I'm done.
Yeah.
So then,
well,
so then
it
like,
wasn't quite that angry, but yeah.
That's... Yeah. But then you pivot into the early 90s where you have this whole sort of church, or at least, spiritually kind of guided music. What was that transition like?
Well, before we transitioned there, I actually, still back in the 80s, I went to Japan. I went back to Japan as a solo guy, solo artist. I wasn't solo this time. I had a wife and two little girls.
Hmm.
And we ended up going back to Japan, getting a recording contract, doing another video. That was cool, too. Doing another album, which we recorded in L.A., which would lead to great contacts, which would really kind of fund the Raymonds for a few years in the 90s. So, yeah, but that didn't last forever. And obviously it wasn't a world famous thing or else you would know about it.
It's interesting, though, to note, and, you know, having the opportunity to have visited with a lot of musicians, both here in this framework and in other aspects of my life, it's interesting when you have artists who are tremendously popular in one country or even just one region, and right. then for whatever reason, it doesn't kind of expand or catch on beyond that. So interesting to have that success, but then have that success be so limited, whether because of musical tastes or whatever. So you come out of that being in Japan, you've moved your family, wife and two girls, it's not working out the way that you want. And then is it like, well, I feel like I could make money doing church music or then what?
Now, it kind of wasn't that. And I was so homesick. My wife really wanted to stay. She's the adventurous one. Mm. And we could have stayed and made it work. But yeah, there were a few things, long story, but And I was so homesick. I wanted to come back to the States, and I'm kind of a wimp. And so
when you say a wimp, what, like you're afraid of like the logical outcomes of things of
taking risks
or what?
No. I don't. No. And I was filled with, you know, would we say faith or would we just say, you know, I don't know. Maybe it was somewhat ignorant too that, you know, just things are fine. Things will be fine. Hmm. You know, and superstardom is just around the corner, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, those kind of things keep you.
You get that one great song that you just have to write, and that's it. That's what's right. standing in the way. You got the one great song.
That's the only thing. People just need to hear it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that more along the lines of just, I just wasn't as comfortable there. I mean, mm-hmm. I just wanted to be in my, I'm kind of a homeboy.
Okay.
Again, that's my wife. And, you know, and so I like to travel, but I don't like to stay there forever.
Sure.
Or for even very long.
Yeah. You like to experience it and then get right back home.
Yeah, because I'm much more comfortable home. So I think that's the key word probably is comfortable. I was not as comfortable there, and I just wanted to come home. But yeah, and then came home and did this stuff with, you know, Michael McLean and Jeff Goodrich and.
Was there any sort of hesitation? Because I know for some people, they have the hesitation about leaning into church music, specifically like Mormon or Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints music, because once you become labeled an LDS artist, that becomes nearly impossible to break away from.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that way of thinking of what you're saying. My thing was, I mean, I'm very proud of my heritage, and uh-huh. I'm very proud to be, you know, to do these things, these quote unquote LDS things or whatever. But I wanted to be known as a rock guy, you know, sort of a rock musician
yeah.
that also does this stuff, and not as a this stuff musician that kind of every now and again does rock. What? You know, is that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but I think that actually sort of stifled some of my progress, that way of thinking, that attitude. So at any rate, no, I don't. I think that people do that no matter what.
Sure, sure.
I mean, in L.A., you know, if your first hit or and if it's not a hit of a song, maybe it's a hit of you're an arranger or whatever. If you
right.
have worked on ballads, because you get a good gig and you can do ballads pretty well. So you do it.
Yeah.
Your heart isn't there, but you do it pretty well.
Sure.
So all of a sudden you are the ballad guy.
Yeah. And look no further than life, right? How many of us are the ballad guy in our particular employment where we're like, I don't know that I love particular employment, but I guess I am the ballad guy, insert whatever yeah. ballad is, and we just sort of roll with it.
Right. And I do it pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, not that I love it. That's the same with me in music, with like production and arranging. I mean, I think I'm pretty good at both.
Yeah.
But I don't really dig it much. I don't really love it. Hmm. You know, I mean, it's just, I love being like a studio player, which I've done for years and years, and going and someone else is producing. And I just, it just, for me, it's just like, it doesn't matter. you know, it doesn't matter what I play. That sounds kind of bad attitude, doesn't it?
No, no, I don't think so. I think it's just honest.
I mean, it's just, it doesn't, I'll play my best and I'll play what they want me to play, but I don't have this big concern about how the big project is coming out and all that. That's for someone, that's a worry for someone else. Mm-hmm. And that's what when you're producing, you have a whole lot of worries. And so I don't love the worries, but I love the music.
It's so fascinating to me to know sort of where a path goes. And personally, I mean, you've shared some personal things as well, just like the reflection of where a life leads, that you would have never thought, I don't think anyway, that as you went out to serve a mission, that you would receive a recording contract as a missionary. And then I don't think that you'd ever would have thought when, after turning that down, whether by the church's kind of influence or by your own or the Spirit, to come home and then have another opportunity. And even though you had that contract and opportunity, to have that not work out and then to pivot towards a religious music and be able to go with that. And then also this composing. It's interesting to me the way that as we get further in life, we're able to sort of look back and see the different pivot points and how, just very honestly, we would have never seen the path that we are now currently on. No matter what situation that is, it's just a fascinating thing to me that it's like, within the church, it seems like we always say that old anecdote of like, hey, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. And I just find that to be more and more true with the more people I talk to.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. You know, the things that you dreamed of that didn't happen, mm-hmm. and you say, oh, that's so sad. But on the other hand, the things that you had no idea were coming up that proved to be huge blessings.
Yeah.
For instance, the rock star thing. Let me just make one comment. You know, both my wife and I were both young in our 20s. She's an adventurous one that I said earlier. She's kind of I won't say wild, but just adventurous there. That's better because, you know, it's 2020. So sometimes I can't use the old words that I used to use because I have different connotations.
Sure.
Now, just too heavy or something. But at any rate, so two of these young kids, and both of us wanted the whole, you know, scene, mm-hmm. you know, hey, let's get famous. Let's be a great musician. And you know, the next Billy Joel, the next Elton John, let's do that. We're both. And now years later, she says it is a huge blessing that never happened.
Well,
because who knows what, because it's a terrible, no one comes out unscathed.
Sure.
No one does.
Like,
I mean, you may be okay. Donny Osmond is fine, but no one comes out unscathed somewhere or another. And in some instances, it's catastrophic.
Sure.
And so,
I mean, you see lives completely torn apart, or addictions in some cases, or, you know, there's any number of examples of infidelity or anything like that, where, like, it is a hard road to hoe to be, I think, to be an artist in general, but especially in sort of the public focused part of being an artist. Being a singer, being an actor, being any of those things that people are constantly looking but also praising to, like, I think that is near impossible to not only do that, but also do that and keep your testimony.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, you have offers like a friend of mine who I won't give his name, but pretty famous band, you know, they would go out, and it wasn't a matter of you know, searching for whatever the vice, you know, cocaine or girls or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't a matter of searching for it. And, hey, can you get me some of this? It was a matter of, it was always there. And your choice was to yes or no. It wasn't, you know, that's scary to me, you know, and I was never on that level. So I never got that, you know, quote unquote, evil privilege, you know what I'm saying? But that's wild to me that, mm-hmm. that it's right there in front of you, wherever you go, and you actually have to physically turn away. It's not a matter of even requesting it. It's a matter of requesting it go away, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, and from so many people, I hear that, like, they just make the decision too late.
Absolutely. And sometimes too, you know, or late. They make the decision late, and sometimes it's not too late,
mm-hmm.
but but it's too many times it's too late for fill in the blank.
Yeah.
For my family, for my, you know, to keep my, you know, fidelity in marriage, et cetera, et cetera. And it would be too late for that, you know? So, yeah, so it can be scary. So yeah, we're going off on a pretty
listen. This is
wild conversation.
That's how we roll, Brett. that is absolutely how we roll. You can't keep us in one box. We have many boxes where we go them and go, what? Ah, no, different box. Let's go here. So you come around to this album in the mid to early 90s where you sound like Sting. Can we talk there and then we'll take another break? Like, tell me about that album. Were you trying to sound like Sting? Because I hear you. I hear you declare your love for Elton John and Billy Joel, and trying to be some of these things. So, were you in fact trying to sound like Sting?
And absolutely, all of these guys, James Taylor, Billy Joel, Sting, and they're all my heroes. And you know, and so naturally, I'm going to put inflections and this and that sound like them. Was I trying to make a parody? No, I don't think so. I hope not.
Sure.
But I mean, if you listen to that album, that song is a very Stingish song, and it was a, you know, very Stingish arrangement, and that was absolutely by design. The other stuff, like you'll hear Gifts of the Little Stream, which sounds like kind of an old James Taylor song in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
And on and on. I mean, the whole thing was sort of a the idea was to make these great primary songs, which are like little pop gems anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
To make them, arrange them, make them sound like the guys that I listened to growing up.
Yeah.
And whether that was Carole King or whether that was Sting, you know, that's it. To make it sound like modern, quote unquote modern, you know, I mean, early to mid 90s influenced music.
I want to take a break again. And as we come back, I want to play a little bit of Sting, quote unquote, singing Book of Mormon stories. I want to play just a little bit of it. So if people haven't heard it before, they can kind of get on board with us after we've talked about it this much and give them an opportunity to really be, as many have been, deceived by Brett Raymond. That's Brett Raymond. It's not Sting. We'll do that coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Hey, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. Are you experiencing panic attacks, nausea, or diarrhea? Is your computer not turning on? Is it running super slow? Is your internet crawling? Or is it just randomly crashing? You could be suffering from ICS, Irritable Computer Syndrome. I want you to ask yourself, when was the last time you had your PC cleaned? Over time, Windows, updates, spyware, malware, and dangerous viruses will make your computer run like crap. You need to bring in your laptop or desktop PC, no matter what brand it is, and let me run a 100% free virus scan, malware, and spyware scan on your computer. Don't wait and risk losing everything. Now, why are we doing this for free? Because we want to impress you so much that if you or any of your friends or family need a computer, service, or phone repair, you come to PC Laptops first. Get into any one of our locations right now or check us out at PCLaptops.com. PC Laptops, where computers start at $7.99. PC Laptops, we love you!
Mormon stories that my teacher tells to me are about the Lamanites in ancient history. Long ago their fathers came from far across the sea. Give them the land if they lived righteously.
Time here for the third and final block of the Cultural Hall. What you just heard, I know it sounds like Sting, and I had to double check this in the break. There are a few YouTube videos where it has Sting singing Book of Mormon stories, and it's your song. So I just think it's so great that people have sort of adopted the fact that they think that what they hear is who, you know, who Sting is, but it's actually you. Just awesome.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny.
And
but, you know, it gets people to listen to that project, and maybe, just maybe, they go deeper on the project and hear other songs from that same album, which I'm very proud of.
Well, and I'm surprised, and you alluded to this at the very beginning, it circles around every couple years.
Yes, it seems to.
I don't want to say that I believe in conspiracy theories, but part of me thinks that the Brett Raymond machine may have something to do with that.
It doesn't ever originate with me, I'll tell you that.
Okay. So you have that success of the mid-90s, but here we are, we're in 2020. So in this last block, I want to kind of get an idea of who and what Brett Raymond is now.
All right. Well,
so fill me in. We get late 90s, early 2000s, and then to today. Who and what? What's up?
Right. Well, mostly what I've done is stuff that you've heard. Absolutely. I mean, you said way at the top of this interview, which I think was about 3 hours ago, but I'm just, you know, but about how, you know, your listeners have most likely heard me 90%. I think it's very close to 100%.
Okay.
And here's why. Not, and they would never associate me with it, but I do a lot of music on national TV. And so, and it doesn't have my name on it, but it's, I mean, I've done production music for years.
Okay, when you say production music, explain that to people. What is production music?
Well, it could be everything from the main theme from a show, or news music, we'll be right back, to jingles, to just hired music, custom music for whatever visual or audio project it might be.
Okay, I was just going to say, I'll bite a little. Give me a jingle or something that I'd go, wait a minute, really?
Well, a couple of things. Jingle-wise, I did... I actually wrote a America First, we're America First, we're your union, with you in mind, a few years ago. That was a jingle.
Okay.
Another sort of jingle, but not like an advertisement, was in the late 90s, I wrote the song and the logo, too, which was kind of funny. I'm not a sportsman. Wasn't even a Utah at the time. I was a California guy, for the Utah Jazz. So. Right around 97, where the Jazz were doing really well.
We call almost. That, yeah, the good old days.
Yeah, the good old days. So Rock with the Jazz, that song, that logo and everything, that was me. And so, but, you know, I didn't have my name on it. It wasn't like Rock with the Jazz by Brett Raymond. No, but it played for really a lot of people. My dad, who was a great sports fan, had the, you know, I think Hardee's had Rock with the Jazz. If you put it up on your window, and the station drove by, you'd get a prize or something. He had that stuff going on and very proud. So one of the coolest things that I think I wrote.
That you think you wrote?
No, one of the coolest things I think.
I know.
Well, let's see. Yeah. And that period.
Yeah. Oh.
I wrote, I don't know. At any
you're
rate,
fine.
Was for Arts Entertainment Channel on, that's still a channel.
Yeah,
Arts
A&E. Entertainment. A&E. Yeah. Yeah, you bet.
I did a couple of things for those guys. Playwrights Theater, so it was the open for that one. But my favorite one was the Agatha Christie Hour, which
okay.
started with this kind of whimsical, sort of, I don't know, scary. Here's my piano. Here we go. 2 seconds.
Okay.
About 4 seconds of it. Did you get that?
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So, Agatha Christie Hour. And nowadays, a lot of my sort of day-to-day, what puts Cheerios on the table and all that is morning news stuff.
Okay.
So
like the jingles in and out of stuff, is that?
I do not like this word jingles. You know why?
Why?
Because it sounds so cheap. Let's use the word theme.
Okay, I'll take theme.
And in fact, I have a theme that replaced John Williams' theme. Whoo!
What?
Wait. How about that for bragging?
Well, hey. John Williams, yeah. If people don't know, is the one who writes the music for everything.
Who's written the soundtracks to Your Life,
yeah.
Whether you knew it or not.
Yeah. I mean, just for example, right? Like all the Star Wars is John Williams for the most part.
Right. Or at least the originals.
Yeah. He also,
the last one was too, by the way.
And he also did, give me a second, Jurassic Park, right?
Jurassic Park. Oh, sure. E.T., Jaws. You know, on and on and on and on and on and on and on. But anyway, and it was NBC Nightly News is his. Bum, 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 bum. Great theme.
Uh-huh.
And this particular theme that I replaced was also John Williams. So that was, you know, so what that means to all your listeners is I am better than John Williams. That's what that really, that's the takeaway.
Shots fired. No. Shots fired.
It's not even close.
Yeah, yeah,
but I had already done the studio music. And so we took my theme from that and redid the open for it using my studio theme. And they liked it, and it put some continuity between the two. And so they liked that, and they liked it better than the age old John Williams thing. So very, very grateful for that.
Just fun to hear not only your passion for music, maybe in some cases your passion for putting Cheerios on the table, but that your life has impacted the lives of those who would call themselves members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's pretty impactful.
I hope so. This latest thing, by the way, it's 2020 now, and I've got a new quote CD that the Deseret Book is releasing. It's actually from 1997, but we redid some of the vocals on it, and we remastered it, and it's beautiful. And anyway, so I did a project called First Light: Scenes from the Restoration, and we're re-releasing that because it's 2020, and 1820 was the date of the first vision. So we're doing that as a bringing it out again, and I'm very proud of that.
I mean, that's pretty impactful, especially when you think in this year of how we have been asked to focus on the restoration as part of General Conference, as we look back the 200-year span since the first vision.
Right.
It's an opportunity for people to be able to, you know, some people are touched when they're able to read the words of the prophet Joseph Smith or those of that time recounting their experiences. Other people are able to feel the Spirit as they have the opportunity to actually go to these places, while still
right.
Others are able to be touched in such a way by music that they could not be touched otherwise.
Yeah, and yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And this is kind of both, because there are themes on this. It's kind of an imaginary movie theme or movie soundtrack. So there are actual themes, like just pieces of music, and then there are songs as well.
And it's called
both words.
Tell me the title again and where people can get
First Light.
Okay.
First Light: Scenes from the Restoration.
Where it's a remastering and also some new vocals, is that it almost seems like it would be more work than the original, you know, 20 some years ago.
No, because it was done with an orchestra.
Oh.
And so so it would have been a lot more work to redo the whole thing. We kept the orchestral tracks and just replaced some of the vocals, most of the vocals actually. But you'll recognize some of the vocalists on it.
Tease me a little bit. Who are some of the vocalists? Sting,
okay.
Elton John,
exactly.
Billy Joel, James Taylor, you already mentioned.
We called them, but at the last minute they pulled. What could we do?
Okay.
Casey Elliott does some. He does the older Joseph songs, and you know him from Gentry.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Beck, who's a great, great singer. He does one. Kenneth Cope's on it again. He was on the original, but he sings a different one this time, and I actually sing the one he did last time.
Interesting.
Yehosh Bonner is on.
Okay.
He sings one, and that's
one of the Bonner
really cool.
family, correct?
Uh-huh, yeah. And Lexi Walker sings one.
And she's popular because of the one, is that right? Lexi Walker was from the one children's choir or whatever.
She's done some stuff with them. I think she's popular just because
of her own. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And she's a wonderful singer. A young kid named Asher Reynolds actually sings the song "How Is a Boy to Know." We actually have a boy singing "How Is a Boy to Know." In 97, I sang all of the Joseph songs.
Hmm.
I sing none of them this time.
Who is this Asher Reynolds?
He's a kid that I think he's 14 now.
Okay.
I think he just turned, or soon to be in March. And he does a lot of musical theater and stuff around here. So,
A phenomenal collection, and people can be able to pick that up. Is there more of that to come? Or are you going back to your souvenir roots, or your?
I've always done both. It's funny, in the church, a lot of people will know me for that because they'll know the Michael McLean song or whatever, and think that's what I do, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, a few years ago, I thought, and I just sort of ballparked everything in my mind. I thought, what percentage of that, of my, of what I do every day, my income, is actually, church related stuff? And it ended up being like 3-5%.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Of which is very, very small.
Yeah.
It's probably even smaller now because that was a few years ago. And, I really haven't done much, hasn't been much call for me to do much. Oh, that's so sad. But had to cry just for a second. But so I'll go back. I have a little band, and we do a Christmas show every year, and I do these little cul-de-sac concerts, we call them.
Oh, that's cool.
So there may be one coming to a cul-de-sac near you. But anyway, the Brett Raymond Imitation Jazz Trio, and that's my little
and so people can check out that music. I'm sure there's some of that online as well.
Yeah, there is actually, and you can go on brettraymond.com and find out, all kinds of fun information. I try to keep it semi-updated, but
life, man, life gets in the way sometimes.
It does. Life gets in the way of life sometimes. So,
Brett, we have three questions that we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall. So I'll ask those of you right now. The first question is, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
Okay. So is that two questions right there?
It's technically, it's like one and one yeah, A, Brett.
Yeah. One A, one B. Yes. Primary pianist.
Oh, cool. And people tell me that's the best calling.
It is so great. And I think I'm going on how many years is it now? Like 4+ years. And it's great. So you may
retire there.
This may be my retirement calling. We'll see.
Well,
yeah, I love it.
No one wants to follow you up. That's the thing. No one wants to follow up Brett Raymond on the piano for the primary kid.
We do have fun. Let's put it that way.
If you could.
And sometimes it's not just the normal stuff, but anyway.
Do you do the costumes and the whole deal?
No.
Okay.
Just musical.
I've seen some pretty outlandish things online, so I figured I'd ask. If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
The one I'm in? Or I kind of like being a sort of a discussion leader, so I wouldn't mind being a gospel doctrine teacher. But maybe I shouldn't say that because, Murphy's Law, angels of Murphy are flying around. And so it's, I may find myself 2 weeks from now, hey, Brett, we thought maybe gospel doctrine teacher. No!
We were listening to that episode.
Too much work. No. I'm just lazy. I let my lazy, sort of determine.
It's not lazy. You're just committed to less work. It's all about how you frame it.
Committed to less work.
That's all that
is.
Oh,
I love that.
That is all that is.
I gotta write that down. Awesome.
The last question that we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
There's so many. Because I think about this a lot. I really do. I think, and the list is so long. I mean, even something like having physical buildings, which is kind of, it's kind of a silly thing. But, you know, when my son was a teenager and they would go on Saturday afternoons to play basketball at that physical building, just that blessing alone. So they're not out, you know, causing trouble or whatever, you know, I mean, just little things. But spiritually, the thing that is the best and why I and probably everyone else is the Spirit. So that's the answer, really. I mean, there are so many things that are awesome, but that's the number one. That's the number one thing, to feel that. To feel that feel of belonging, that warmth, that connection. So
I love it. We hope that this episode, Brett, has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we will be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.